A 6-vote difference after almost 400,000 votes cast. We talked with the candidates who ran for the Iowa 2nd Congressional District in the cities. The pundits predicted it would be a close race, but no one thought this close. Iowa Secretary of State has certified that Dr. Marionette Miller Meeks won the race for the 2nd Congressional District by 6 votes. Democrat Rita Hart has not conceded, saying earlier this month that uncounted ballots, including some from the military and overseas voters, need to be added to the totals to help determine the election. Hart's team is asking for a petition to have the democratically controlled U.S. House examine all the ballots cast in the Iowa 2nd Congressional race. We'll talk with Rita Hart in a moment, but we start with the apparent winner of this election, state-certified representative-elect Marionette Miller Meeks. Well, Iowa has certified the vote, declaring you all but elected. I mean, do you consider yourself the elected congresswoman for southeastern Iowa?
Yes, I consider myself the congresswoman-elect, but we do realize that there are other political partisan processes that may take place. But nonetheless, we have to be proactive in trying to make sure that people in eastern and southern Iowa know that they have a representative. And are in the process of looking at where to put district offices so people have the availability, the accessibility, and the knowledge of where to go to seek help should they need to reach their member of Congress. So I'm looking forward to being sworn in on January 3rd, but at the same point in time, we are continue to prepare for a process should Rita Hart officially file a petition with the House Committee on Administration.
And that is what seems to be what's going to happen, which would mean that it would be thrown into the Democratic-controlled House of Representatives. What do you say about that?
Well, I think it's extremely disappointing that they would override and dismiss the Iowa court system, the judicial system here in our state. I have faith in the election process. We have election laws. If you don't like the election laws, you can, legislatively change those. Rita Hart never determined to do that. And I was ahead in the vote count on the election night. After the 24 county canvass and audit, I was ahead. And then I was ahead after her recount. There's plenty of time to do whatever recount that she thought needed to be done. And at this point in time, I've been certified by the state, as you said, and that was a bipartisan 5-member executive council that unanimously signed off giving me this certificate of election. And I think it's disappointing that you don't have faith in your own state and the voters of your state. She numerous times said that she would listen to the voters, but I find that this is tone deaf when it comes to what Iowans want and who they voted for. Never should a process by a political body such as Nancy Pelosi and a Maryland Democrat override the intention of voters. This disenfranchises hundreds of thousands of Iowa voters.
Rita Hart says she's also going to be attending the new congressperson's orientation, which is standard to have that orientation, as you well know, because you'll be taking part in it as well. Is that disappointing to you as well as that she is going to be in Washington, D.C. to train to be a new congressperson?
No, we were both in Washington, D.C. together prior to Thanksgiving for the first half of orientation. After I was certified as the winner of the election contest, she was not in Washington, D.C., or at least I did not see her in Washington, D.C. for the second half of orientation. But I do think you have to prepare. And so I think it was perfectly appropriate for her to have been at the first half of orientation. But I think now that, the recount is completed, I've been certified as the congresswoman-elect, and winning this contest, I think we need to move on with making sure that people in eastern and southern Iowa have the representation that they deserve. And again, I think it's so dismissive of the voters of Iowa, of our all of the county auditors who worked so hard and so diligently to get us through this election cycle and through the recount, and then of our court system to just dismiss all of that and say, we're gonna have our representative decided by a partisan political process in Washington, D.C.
You can see that a lot of people, partisans would say, okay, look at this. We've got a Republican who says, oh no, every vote counts because you won, with a president who is not allowing the Democrat to win. And then the opposite viewpoint where Democrats are saying, oh, wait. Do you see what I'm saying is that, what do you say to the Democrats who are saying, okay, now Republicans, this is an example that every vote should count?
Well, every vote should count and every legal ballot has been counted. I have never asked nor demanded that my opponent concede while she availed herself to all the legal avenues that were available to her to petition for redress of the election. However, we've already, unlike the presidential race, we've already recounted all the ballots. And I think the president should be able to go through the same legal process and avenues that are available to him. But at the same point in time, I think President-elect Biden should be able to have information that he needs to be able to arrange to take office if that legal process fails to show any difference in what has occurred. And we also know the Electoral College also has to meet and truly declare the president. So, but my opponent is not doing that. She skipped over an Iowa process, dismissing and overriding. And basically what she wants to do is override Iowa election law and do what the rules were when she got into this contest. She's been elected before. She also ran as a lieutenant governor running mate. So she knows what the election laws are. She knows what the rules are, but now she wants a partisan political body to change the rules and not abide by Iowa's election law or by the intent of Iowa's voters.
Oh my gosh, a 6-vote difference, some almost 400,000 votes cast. What does that say to you? What an amazingly razor-thin election.
It is a razor-thin election, but what it tells me is what we knew going into this election was that it would be a very close contest. This is a swing district. It is a purple district. And therefore, I'm going to do what I did as a state senator, and that is I'm going to treat people how I want to be treated with the golden rule. I'm going to be available, accessible, and try to meet the needs of all of the constituents of this district, just as I did in the Senate. And I think if you look at my margin of votes for the Senate race in 2018, and then the margin of votes I had in the same Senate district for this race, it was far in excess. And so I think that showed people when I was a senator that I was going to be their representative for all of them, regardless of their political party and regardless of whether they voted for me or not. And I will do the same thing in Congress.
Because you really did have respectable results when you ran in 2008, 2010, and 2014. Does those losses and then this victory mean that much more to you?
Absolutely. I think it underscores that being out there, being present, and that not letting failure define you. You know, failure doesn't define who you are. How your response to failure defines you. That's how we raised both of our children. We know that when things go right or when you make a good grade in school or you get a promotion, that builds your self-esteem and your confidence. But that losses really define your character, who you are. And it's so important to be able to develop resiliency. And we hear a lot of this. I heard it even yesterday at a Healthy Communities Forum that I participated in as a state senator. And I hope that in some small way, my trajectory is an inspiration to people to continue to try, to continue to have hope and to have faith and never to give up, to keep fighting and fight for those things that are important to you.
Well, you do remember that in this district, Jim Leach was from Davenport and then moved to Iowa City. Dave Loebsack, Iowa City based. You are based in Ottumwa for the most part, and it's the first time in more than a generation that we've had a representative who's not from one of the major cities. Is that significant to you? I mean, does that say something to the people in far southern Iowa that you're especially proud of?
I'm especially proud of the fact that I am from just about the geographic center of the district, even though I'm not from the population center. And I think that helps people to know that I will have a focus and a voice for rural Iowa, for smaller Iowa and small town Iowa. I chose to live here when I relocated from the University of Iowa into a private practice here in Ottumwa. It is a great place to be, to live, work, and raise a family. And I certainly would want to promote all of Iowa's small towns within our second congressional district. So I do think it's significant, but I also think it highlights the fact that no matter where you live, that you can be a messenger and a voice and attentive to everybody, no matter where they are within our district. And my focus is going to be on highlighting the great opportunities we have here, continuing to grow our economy, continuing to make Iowa a safe place to live, work on things like accessible health care, affordable health care, lowering prescription drug prices, and then getting us through this pandemic and preparing for the next one. And I'll be more than happy to send out a video when I receive the vaccine for COVID-19.
Because that's really important to you. When we talked to you before the election, you were really underlining how important it is for the vaccine. So tell me, do you think among the critics is that it is being rushed, or that it may not be going through all the safety tests that it needs to have?
Absolutely not. And I think people have heard Dr. Fauci say this as well. What I think President Trump needs to be given credit, and Vice President Pence, the Coronavirus Task Force, all of the researchers, the scientists, and the FDA, that because of the way they pre-funded vaccine development and they allowed things to happen concurrently, for us to get a vaccine this rapidly, I just think is phenomenal. There were no shortcuts on safety or efficacy. As a matter of fact, this vaccine is much more effective than, for instance, our influenza vaccine. So I feel fully confident that it will be safe, that it will be effective. And as I said, I will be lining up. Of course, there are priorities, and there should be. So those that are in the healthcare field, our first responders, those that are in assisted living or residential facilities such as nursing homes, our elderly, and those people with medical conditions that put them most at risk. Those individuals need to have priority. But when my time comes, I will be more than happy to be first in line to get vaccinated.
Do you, because a lot of people saying this is one of the biggest tests. I mean, finding the vaccine is a big deal. Getting the vaccine out there, I'm not going to say is a bigger deal, but still is also a Herculean effort. Are you confident that it's going to be prioritized appropriately? Are you happy that it's kind of the states that are doing it for the most part?
There's CDC guidance and has an algorithm for who receives the vaccine first. But let me tell you my experience as a director of the Iowa Department of Public Health. I was in that position right after the H1N1. And one of the things that I'll continue to advocate for, especially if there's another COVID-19 package, is that there is direct funding to our local public health agencies. That comes through a grant through CDC, and it's a grant for local public health agencies. And they did phenomenal work in getting the vaccine out to people for H1N1. They held drive-through clinics, if you will, for people to get vaccinated. So they're up to the task. They have knowledge, they have experience. And so, yes, I think our local public health officials, and I've never been an advocate of regionalization of our local public health. I wanted to we actually have 101, not 99, local public health agencies. But the reason for that is because of the important work they do within communities. And this is really underscores the importance of these local agencies being able to continue in the manner that they do to handle outbreaks. So I have full confidence that here in Iowa, we are going to be able to disseminate the vaccine. We also have provider offices, physicians, nurse practitioners, PAs, and pharmacies that can also give vaccinations. And I think that we'll use the entire force of our healthcare community in order to get people vaccinated and do so in a timely fashion.
You mentioned that Congress is, of course, working on a COVID relief package. About $900 billion rather, has been kind of the starting point. What do you want to see in that package? Because obviously it's still being discussed between the three parties, the Republicans, the Democrats, and the White House.
Most important things, I think, is to continue unemployment for those individuals who have lost their jobs and have not been able to become reemployed. And then small business, we need to have help for our small businesses. Every week, I either get a phone call or several phone calls or emails about small business owners that barely survived the first forced closure of their business and do not think that they can survive this next closure. I just received another one of them a few days ago, and I'm responding to those emails. But we absolutely need to help to have help for our small business owners, whether that's the payment protection program or a faster method of getting help to individuals. Continuing of unemployment benefits for those who are unemployed, I think, is important. And then, as I said, help for our local public health agencies so that they can continue to do testing, they can do tracing, they can continue to give guidance and information on people what they should do if they have a positive test, and encourage them to go to a medical facility or provider should they have significant symptoms. So I think those things are very important in a COVID-19 package. And then also making sure that all of our institutions, be they nursing homes, be they hospitals, emergency rooms, clinics, that they have access to PPE, and making sure that we're continuing to have a supply chain so that there's not a shortage of that very necessary equipment.
The White House plan, though, also includes a $600 payment to each American, but does not include a federal unemployment supplement. Does that worry you? I mean, because it sounds like you want the unemployment supplement. Is it important to get cash in the hands of every single American as well?
I think given that there are people currently who have not been employed, have not had a revenue stream coming in, and who were employed and working prior to the pandemic and the forced closure of their business, that I think both of those things are important. We know that we have a vaccine. We know it's going to be approved very soon. And hopefully after the vaccine, we'll be able to get back up to normal. So I think that those are part of the negotiations and part of the conversations that are being held now between both the Republicans, the Democrats, and the White House on, how extensive does it need to be? How long does it need to be? And that we know that we want to reopen our economy safely and get people back to work, because there's a dignity in work and a fulfillment in being able to work and provide for yourself and your family.
You did point out, of course, that you've been a lawmaker in Des Moines for the last few terms, and you've seen a Republican majority there. You're moving into the House, which, of course, is a Democratic majority in Washington. Tell me about bipartisanship. I mean, in order for you to serve an area where you won just by 6 votes, you really have to be very bipartisan for the next 2 years.
Well, certainly Iowa's 2nd Congressional District is a swing district, or a purple district, as I had mentioned. But I'll tell you the same tactic I took in going in to the state Senate, and that was the golden rule. And I treat people how I want to be treated. I treat people with courtesy, with respect, with dignity. I make myself available to listen to them, to listen to their concerns. I may not always agree with them, but I think being able to have a conversation and a dialogue and a debate is critically important. As the chair of Human Services, we passed really terrific health policy legislation, and I was given the authority to do that and the go-ahead to do that by my caucus leaders and my leaderships. They said, if you're the doctor, if it makes good health policy sense, do it. And, there is no there's no one person that has good ideas. Good ideas come from all sides of the aisle. So I was fortunate to be able to take good ideas and to be able to pass them. So we passed legislation asking for a waiver for lawful permanent residents to get access to prenatal care. We passed legislation to end preauthorization for smoking cessation treatment on Medicaid. We passed legislation to get transparency for pharmacy benefit managers so that we could lower prescription drug prices. We also passed legislation ending the preauthorization for medication-assisted treatment for substance use disorder. So when people want to go into recovery, they can get the assistance and the guidance they need, and you're not overburdening the healthcare system and physicians and nurse practitioners by putting more barriers in the way from them to help people.
Representative-elect Marionette Miller-Meeks, and in a moment we'll hear from Rita Hart about her plans moving forward. But first, Laura Adams joins us with a holiday list of ideas for you if you go out and about.
This is Out and About through January 5th, 2021. Experience the astounding moment when Allied and German soldiers laid down their arms on Christmas Eve to celebrate the holiday together during World War I, when WQPT presents All Is Calm, the Christmas Truce of 1914, on the 24th at 9 p.m. Blakelock by the Light of the Moon exhibit opens at the Figge and runs through March 7th. Or check out all of the holiday light displays. Fegiveri holiday lights in Davenport continue to dazzle through January 3rd. Or visit the Rock Family Christmas display, delighting guests since 1987, at the Tikoga Winery in DeWitt. And new this year, the Gross Family Christmas display in Sherrard is sure to inspire holiday cheer through December 31st. Shop local at the Holiday Pop-Up Market in East Moline at the Iron and Grain Coffee House, running through the 30th. From ancient times to today, children have played with toys. Explore the role of toys through the Putnam Original Exhibit, Play the Story of Toys, through December 31st. And don't forget to catch the virtual performances of Christmas at Augustana. 300 student musicians share the joy of the season through December 24th. Plus, you can stream the Festivus Show, a two-day holiday extravaganza with 11 musical acts performing in 11 different downtown Davenport businesses, December 26th and 27th from 7 to 10 at home and streaming. For more information, visit WQPT.org.
As we said earlier, the race for the Iowa 2nd Congressional District came down to a 6-vote difference after almost 400,000 votes were cast. The state certified Republican Marionette Miller Meeks as the winner, but Democrat Rita Hart is yet to concede, and we talked with Rita Hart about her concerns regarding the votes that were cast. Well, the question would be, why are you disputing the certified vote?
Well, we saw the process, and we recognize that there was a lot of inconsistencies across the district, and because of a time restraint, and because of the way the recount was done, with each county having a recount board who went about this differently. As a result, we know that there are thousands of votes that did not get counted, that were treated differently across the district. And so we just want to make sure that every vote is counted, that people can trust that their vote actually was counted. And it didn't matter whether that vote was cast in Des Moines County or Clinton County or Johnson County, that it was examined and tabulated accordingly.
Now, what you want is a petition to a House committee to actually look into this election. The House, of course, democratically controlled. It throws far more partisanship into this. And Dr. Miller Meeks says that's just not right.
Well, the fact is that this is a legal pathway that was actually created for just such a situation. This is part of the Federal Contested Elections Act, which was put in place back in 1969. Hundreds of contests like this have been considered using this law. And in our case, this was a situation where the remedy that we need is to have the time and the process to look at every vote, to make sure that every vote was counted. And we had a process and a recount where we had 72 people who took more than almost 2 weeks time to do that and still were not able to get that job done. And so if we would have taken this to the state judicial system, there was a 6-day window for 5 judges to be able to do what 72 people could not get done in 2 weeks. So that simply was not going to be able to give us the result that we need, the remedy that we need, which is to make sure that every vote is counted. So this is a pathway that we can make sure that that happens.
Don't you fear, though, that if the House were to give the election to you, if they declare that you are the winner after it's already been certified, that people are going to see as you as a person who has stolen this race, or that you weren't duly elected? In other words, the certification process, some people would say, okay, that's the end.
Well, that's because people don't understand what happened in this recount. The fact that thousands of votes were not looked at. That a vote that was, I think that this is the bottom line, you know, is that people, our democracy is built on the fact that we have a free and responsible election process. And when it's clear that a person could vote, fill out a ballot in a certain fashion, and in one county it was counted and in another county it was not, that is basically unfair. And has to, and every vote needs to be counted. And so while this people may look at this, and I'm hearing this criticism from the Republicans about taking this to the House, there is a process here. And this is a committee that contains both Republicans and Democrats, and a process will be put into place. And my sole goal is to make sure that those votes are counted. And if that is it does not happen through this process, and if it is not a fair process, if we don't get the remedy that we need here to take a look at every vote, then I will drop this petition. That's the bottom line, is that we have got to take seriously how important it is that people's votes get counted.
So you are saying this, of course, as a Democrat, and you know the White House and President Trump is saying the same, there's problems with this election from a Republican point of view. Does this, in your mind, say that there's real problems with our election system, whether it's at the very local level, as you say, county by county, or as the president says, from state to state?
No, it's a totally different issue here. We're not saying that there was fraud or that there was malicious intent in any way, shape, or form. That's what is happening at the presidential level. It's not the same thing. And also the margins are totally different, right? I mean, we're talking at the presidential level, millions of votes of difference there. And here we're talking about 6 votes difference in an election of where nearly 400,000 votes were cast. That's why it's so important that we get this right, and why it's so important that every single vote was counted accurately.
That is the razor-thin 6th vote that is so gnawing, I would assume, for you as well. Are you surprised that it became that close, and what do you attribute it to?
Well, yeah, I can't help but be surprised. I mean, this is the closest election, the closest congressional election in the entire country. And it's the closest election here in Iowa that we've seen in 100 years. And so it is surprising that it is this close. It does put a spotlight on the process. It does put a spotlight on how important every single vote is. I think we should be very cognizant of how important it is to get this right. But in the grand scheme of things, I knew when we entered this race a year and a half ago, it seems like a lifetime ago, that this was going to be a very close race. This is definitely a toss-up district. Definitely when we knew that when Dave Loebsack decided to retire and we lost and that incumbency did not exist here in this district, that this would be a race that both parties would be fighting for, and that it would be a very close race. Just didn't realize it would be this close.
Well, and it was a very tough fight between the two opponents. So what do you see, if the outcome does not come in your favor in January, what do you see as the future for Rita Hart?
Well, we'll have to see what happens there. I think right now I'm just really focused on making sure that that every vote is counted, and that the people of this district can rest assured that their votes made a difference, and that the correct person then is representing them. And so I'm looking forward to getting this resolved so that we can move on.
Democrat Rita Hart, on the air, on the radio, on the web, and on your mobile device, and now streaming on your computer. Thanks for taking some time to join us as we talk about the issues on the cities.